I'd like to take us back to the study. We were talking about removing bitterness, and bitterness is to our soul a festering poison. It is that which hardens the face. It hardens the souls, the very tender mercies of a person's life. Makes people cynical, makes them very hard to live with, live around. By it, that root springing up, many are defiled. And so removing bitterness is a very, very important part. We were talking about doing this work, identifying the problem. We said, here's a practical matter. List the people that you have with whom you have regular contact. Then circle the ones that you with whom you have conflicts. This is that on paper process of you actually identifying the people that you're having difficulties with. Then we said, thirdly, estimate how often you have conflicts with each one. So deal with the one that has the most conflicts. Then number four, describe in detail the most recent or one of the most recent conflicts. We gave four examples of teens that were working on this situation. Friday, I came home for lunch, and both of my brothers were there. This is a young lady coming home from lunch from school. When I came in the door, the younger brother says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I came home for lunch." He said, "You can just go back to school where you belong." Since they were there before me, they should have had my lunch ready. I said, "Why didn't you fix me anything?" They said, "We didn't feel like it." When I asked why they were acting that way, he said, "It's none of your business." We had a few wrong words, and I went back to school without any lunch. I was very disappointed in my brother. All right, yes?
He should have had a cell phone.
Yeah. This is one of those things, conflict with the brother. A second one, I was washing the floor when my little sister came in from playing. I asked her to get upstairs and help my other sister clean her room. She looked at me as if to say, "Just who do you think you are?" She bluntly said, "No." Mom was on the phone, so I took matters into my own hands and began to help her walk upstairs. I ended up dragging her by the arms. I didn't hurt her, but to cause trouble, she began to scream and cry as if I were trying to kill her, which then she wanted to do. Then the young man said, "I was sitting in front of the TV, naturally. My dad came in, told me to go do something besides watching TV. So I went over and got one of my friends. We were playing in the garage and we were bouncing the basketball against the back door. My dad came out swearing at us like he always does. I said, 'Well, you don't have to swear about it.' He said, 'I'll swear if I want to.' I told him, 'Not around me, swear someplace else.' Well, that set off the fuse. He grabbed a stick from the garage, came at me swinging. I told my friend to scatter. He ran one way, I ran the other. We went over to his house, and he told his mother what happened. She said, 'I couldn't come over anymore. At this rate, I'll lose all my friends.' When I came home, my dad said, 'If you don't stop causing trouble, I'm going to stick you in a home.' He always threatens to stick me in a home." And then the fourth one was, "Dad, Mom, and I," young lady says, "were at the breakfast table when we started discussing my future occupation. Somehow I said the wrong thing. I said that my life as a married woman would have little outside activity, etc. I gave Mom's life as an example. I didn't mean for it to cause friction, but it sure did. She told me I was ungrateful, unwilling to help around the house, etc. I said many things I shouldn't have. It's so hard. I love her very much, but we always have a tense feeling between us." All right, one of the things then that we encourage you to do in this is to list that person's faults. This way it gets it down on paper. You begin to see it. You try to recognize in the larger sense, in an all-encompassing concept, what's going on here. It helps you to analyze. Then step two, list your faults, which are always hard because we can't see our own very well, but recognize our faults as it relates to them, as they would see it. Then step three, purpose to ask forgiveness. Before you can forgive, you need to ask forgiveness. And this is really psychologically the opportunity for you to recognize you're part of the problem. So you purpose to ask for forgiveness. Now, do this, you have to understand your basic offense. In these stories, we saw that the one that was talking about coming home for lunch, the brother said, "You can just go back to school where you belong." The immediate offense that she had toward him was described as a few wrong words. So this was right on the verge of her lips, on the top of her heart, few wrong words. And that's the immediate offense. But what's the basic offense? The basic offense was a wrong attitude toward the brothers, a failure, as Galatians 5 tells us, by love serve one another. Washing the floor, the little sister projected, "Who do you think you are to give me orders?" The immediate offense was taking matters into my own hands. What does that reveal about the basic offense? Harboring bitterness against the sister who was playing while she had to work. Then stick you in a home situation. The dad said, "If you don't stop causing trouble, I'm going to stick you in a home." The immediate offense was banging the basketball against the back door. But the basic offense was the whole thing of laziness, watching TV all the time, ungratefulness, stubbornness, and so on. And then the breakfast table, the mom said, "You're ungrateful, unwilling to help around the house." So the immediate offense was saying many things I shouldn't have back to the mother. And that indicates that the basic offense was, in fact, as stated, an attitude of ungratefulness and laziness in duties at home. So you ask then for forgiveness for the basic offense, not just some trivial immediate offense, but the basic offense. And we pointed out that there's lots of different ways to say it wrongly and to intimate wrong things, to excuse yourself. But the best way is to say something like, "God has convicted me about how wrong I was in my basic offense. I know I have wronged you in this. I've come to ask, will you forgive me?" So now we need, once that's taken care of, we need before God to fully forgive their offenses. It's not only logical, but also essential to fully forgive those from whom we purpose to ask forgiveness. This step must be completed with sincerity and with no reservations. So when you have isolated the basic personal offenses that they have done to you, and you have dealt with it, the relationship is often seen between how you are treating them and how they treat you. It's kind of an interesting thing. I've talked to people where very often when the person has been offended, recognize that it lay within the person that was offended. It lays within their activity to have done essentially the same thing, though different words, different situation. But for instance, demeaning the person. They felt demeaned, and but it was a simple reflection of the demeaning that they were projecting. So for instance, let's give these examples. The home for lunch situation. The brothers were reflecting the poor attitude of their sister back to them. The basic offense to be forgiven of the brothers is the attitude of bitterness and laziness on the part of the brothers. Laziness, not willing to serve. They were saying, "Why should we fix your lunch?" This you need to forgive. Washing the floor situation. The little girl's belligerence resulted from the older sister assuming responsibility that was not hers, acting like the mother. So the basic offense to be forgiven is, this is some of the irritations that little sisters give. Mom Weigel was talking to Paul, and he was talking about little baby Jude and something about whining and needing help or something, and needing held. She said, "Paul,
that's why he's a baby. He needs to be babied. He goes, oh, yeah, that's right. So the thing is, part of being a little girl is that every so often you cry. And you can't take that as an irritation. You have to say that's a statement of that development of their maturity. So basic forgiveness, the irritation that a little sister tends to produce. Stick you in a home. The father's anger stemmed from the son's misuse of his time, and that being brought up, the son felt offended, felt abused. The father felt abused because his son was lazy and not doing the right thing. So the basic offense to be forgiven is the father's poor example of Christian maturity, as evidenced by swearing and giving vent to a bad temper. That has to be fully forgiven. And then breakfast table. The mother's tense feelings resulted from the ungratefulness and laziness of the daughter. And then the mother returned those tense feelings. And the basic offense to be forgiven was how the mother was harboring resentment against the daughter for those things said. So what we want to say is, let's fully forgive them. This was emphasized over and over again by Christ in his earthly ministry. He defined his disciples in this way. So Matthew 18:21-22, then Peter came to him and said, Lord, how oft shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Till seven times? Jesus saith unto him, I say not unto you until seven times, but until 70 times 7. This is that concept that we are not to put limitations on how often we will forgive. The spiritual importance of forgiving was taught in the Sermon on the Mount. For if you forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you forgive not men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive you your trespasses. It's part of being forgiven to learn how to forgive. We'll load up abnormal social developments there. And let me get started on this. Here is a statement, a list of eight developments. And these happen, if not exactly in this order, at least relatively in this order, with young people and their parents. Calling it abnormal social development, abnormal from a Christian point of view. These things, over and over again, we find these occurring in a home. And there's a visible sign that the teenager shows, but it is not understood by the parent, and so they have a typical and human response to it. But we want to look at the inner conflict that's actually going on and the biblical insight that the parents should have. The development number one, we see the teen's visible signs, communication breakdown. What's going on here is they don't talk anymore. You know, how was your day? Fine. What happened to school? Went to classes. And the communication breakdown. Now, that's actually signaling something, but normally the parent has a response to say, well, I know they're upset with me about this, but I did the right thing. I'm justifying myself. I'm busy. I have these things to do, so I'm going to justify myself. What's really going on here is that the teen's inner conflicts show a wounded spirit. There was a time when my son John, little boy, came home and he was just being kind of smart-alecky and upset about things. And I was ready in my flesh to jump down his throat. And I thought, wait a minute, this isn't like John. And so I said to him, hey, John, this isn't like you. You're acting you're acting strange. What's going on here? And he almost broke down in tears, and he told me that there at the Christian school, some of the big boys told him they were going to beat him up next day. They were going to have their gang, and he had to bring his gang. He says, I don't have a gang, so he felt he was going to get beat up. And he was just feeling, you know, overwhelmed by it all. And I said, well, you just bring your gang. He said, what do you mean? I said, me. I said, I want you to think about what that's like when they start coming after you, and I step out of the car, and I say, come on, guys, you know. These are elementary school kids, you know. I said, I'll boot them into high school, you know. And he just laughed, and the whole thing dissolved the tension in him. But you see, there was a step there to say, what's going on? What's the inner conflict? And the inner conflict here is a wounded spirit. Something has happened that has wounded the spirit of this person against the parent. Paul urges the father not to discourage, to ruin the heart of the child. And you do this by making promises you don't keep, by being unreasonable. These are things you have to consider and humbly say, you know, that was a wrong thing for me to do, and make it right. Make it right as soon as possible. Reflect your human frailty and show them how you deal with that when it happens. So, wounded spirit. The insight is Hebrews 12:15, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Take notice if bitterness is showing in your child. Other relationships the same way, husband and wife, and others that you have a relationship with. Sense the wounded spirit. It will show up as a communication breakdown. The second development, if this is left undone, the next development comes, and the visible sign here is ungratefulness. This is where nothing's good enough and there is no thank you. The parent's response is to get into comparing. Well, when I was a kid, we didn't have all these great things, you know. You should be happy. We had to walk in the snow uphill to school, you know, and all of these things. And then we come back, and it was uphill that way, too. It was terrible. So, comparing, when I was a kid, what's really going on with this ungratefulness is the teen's inner conflict is an alienation of affection. They now are saying, I don't have a loving relationship with you. And this comes across. This is illustrated by ungratefulness. What is the insight? Well, this is the way that men are in the last days, 2 Timothy 3:2, for men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers. Notice two things right side by side, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. So this is the stage two development. Now the wounded spirit has alienated affection, and now they're showing ungratefulness. Development number three, the teen's visible signs, is stubbornness. Just won't do what they are supposed to do. The parent's response, normally, nag. Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it. So what's going on? The teen's inner conflict here, the stubbornness, is the rejection of authority. Now the alienation of affection has grown to where they reject authority. And we need to recognize that this is a terrible thing. Once they've rejected authority, they are rejecting all authority. You're just the closest one. 1 Samuel 15:23, for rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. Witchcraft, and of course this is witchcraft as any idea of divination and superstitious work. But this is rebellion against God, and rebellion against God is the same as that witchcraft. Stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. Samuel 2, Saul. So understand that you're dealing with this whole idea of authority, and now you need to go back to the beginning, ask for forgiveness for what caused the wounded spirit, reestablish affection, and so on. Development number 4, the teenage sign is out rebellion. The parents' response is to restrict them. They're rebelling. I'm just going to keep them at home. They can't do these things. What's really going on? Well, having now a bad attitude toward their authority, they have established themselves as authority. To be like the authority. This was the sin of Satan. The insight is Isaiah 14:14. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be not better than God. I will be like the Most High. See? And so to be like your authority is to say they don't have any authority over me. So that's what's going on inside when rebellion shows. Trying to be like, you know, I'm just as good as the authority. Development number 5 begins to show up after rebellion. It shows up as wrong friends. The response of the parents is usually FBI, Family Bureau of Investigation. Checking into things, finding out what they're doing, checking up where they went. What's really going on, the teenage inner conflict, is compatibility of rebellion. Having rejected authority, they find around them others who also are rebellious. And so they like gets together with like. These birds of a feather flock together. What is the insight we should have in dealing with such a thing? Philippians 3:19, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is their shame, who mind earthly things. This compatibility of rebellious people, not good in the end. And Proverbs 14:9, fools make a mock at sin, but among the righteous there is favor. Well, this leads to development number 6. We begin to see in the teenager that they are speaking about sensuality and they are defending it. Well, normally the parent's response in this is either to condemn that or to condone it, depending on how they feel about the situation. But what's going on really? Well, this is the indication when people defend sensuality is that they have already begun sensual fulfillment. They are out testing these things. Parent needs to be very, very aware of this. Galatians 5:19-21. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these. And look at all the sensuality: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance. Witchcraft and occultism itself is heavily populated by people who've gone through this whole abnormal social development. Rebellion, rejection of authority, and so on. The compatibility of rebellion, finding other people, you know, dress gothic and look weird and puncture their face with all these things. Witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, sedition, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like. Of the which I tell you before, as I told you in time past, they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. So at this point, the parent needs to be broken and come before this person, asking for forgiveness and starting over. We're only 2 from the end. Development number 7, we find that the teen's visible signs as this grows is now condemning others, and often this is the parents. The parents' response is defending themselves. But what's going on inside is guilt. The attack on others is a matter of guilt, shows guilt. The insights here, Romans 2:1-3, Therefore thou art inexcusable, O man, whosoever thou art that judgest, for wherein thou judgest another, thou condemnest thyself, for thou that judgest doeth the same things. But we are sure that the judgment of God is according to truth against them which commit such things. And thinkest thou this, O man, that judgest them which do such things, and doest the same, that thou shalt escape the judgment of God? So they are feeling guilty here, but that comes out by condemning others. Well, they say they're so good, but, you know, this and that. And then at last we find that this development, excitement and depression, that manic response, this back and forth situation, excitement, depression. The parents' response, what? What do I do now? What's going on here? Very often is the case, the teen's inner conflict are thoughts of suicide. Man was not made to live in that state of rebellion, harboring bitterness, and giving themselves to sensuality. And while that may seem like the cool thing for a while, it just tears you up inside. There are at least four kinds of suicide. One is mental suicide, which happens with drugs. There is moral suicide, just a surrender to sensuality. Girls go into prostitution, guys go into prostitution. They claim themselves to be gay, they do all these things, a surrender to sensuality. There is spiritual suicide, where they go into occultism. It's their new religious group and their new church support group. And then, of course, there's physical suicide, and horribly, there's only once that happens, and then it's all done. The insight, Proverbs 14, 12 and 13. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Even in laughter, the heart is sorrowful, and the end of that mirth is heaviness. So we finish our series on bitterness by recognizing that there's a pattern to this bitterness that needs to be stopped. When you see it in those under your care, under your responsibility, recognize that at the beginning is a wounded spirit, a promise made that was not kept, a harshness that was uncalled for. Don't make them lose heart. Don't discourage them. Comments or questions?